Welcome to another edition of the Courage to Be the Difference podcast. I am your host, Sherry Ruskus. And as always, it's my honor to be here with you to share some antidotes and ideas around the idea of the power of courage and how other people have been able to apply it either into their own lives or into the lives of others. And today I'm delighted to have with me someone who knows this topic we're going to be talking about today well, and that's the topic on how to be a better manager. Let's not say just a good manager, but a better manager. And I have with me the delightful Annette Mathias with Aspen Edge Consulting. Annette is the founder and CEO of this consulting firm that she started 2 years ago. And Annette, well, first of all, welcome to the podcast.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. And I'm excited to talk to you about this topic because I know that it's either for small business owners, it's one of those things that they either put on the back burner so far that they never use it, or that they get too involved in it and they're not doing some of the other duties. So it's that balance. And it's something, since you've started your own business, that you have learned well, that it's probably a little different than it was in your corporate role. And I really think that's one of the first questions I want to ask you is, how do you see it differently, or do you see it differently in managing your own business and how you see it in the work that you do in the corporate world, helping other managers become better managers?
Sure. So when I was in the corporate world, I was a senior leader of a division of an almost $2 billion organization. And I had a piece of the pie. So I led the human resources function. I was in charge of the culture and hiring. I called it sort of hiring to firing and all of that piece of it. So I really had one part of the business, even though I was connected to the strategy and working with the strategy of the whole organization. It was really my part and my piece of the pie. Running my own business is a little different because I have to wear all those different hats. And I will tell you, exactly, I knew that it was going to be a challenge. It's probably 10 times harder than I thought it was going to be because I know my stuff. I know the part of the business, that slice of the pie that I brought into my business. But there's the marketing and the sales and the CFO and all of those different parts of it, which I thought, how much of my time will that really take up? Is what I thought when I started it. And it takes up a whole lot more of my time than I ever could have anticipated. And I had to, you know, increase the skill level that I have in all of those different areas.
Fantastic. And then coming back to the manager role, I mean, how would you define the role of manager? How do you define it?
Well, it's about getting stuff done, really. So all of those, it's managing a lot of tasks, managing procedures, managing functions. But the thing that is different from being an individual contributor versus being a leader is really about getting those things done through other people. So when you have a brand new person and they've stepped into a supervisory role or a managerial role for the first time, they may have been a fantastic individual contributor and they can plow through and get things done. But now it's achieving those results through other people, through inspiring them, through all of the work that you need to do around managing employees. So it's really getting it done through other people, which is a very different skill than just doing it yourself. You have to learn how to talk about expectations and standards and accountability and all of those things.
Well, and one of the things that I've learned along my journey as in when I put on that manager hat, it's that ability to actually delegate, right? It's to take off the technician hat and go, you know what, I need to manage now. I need to delegate this out, especially when you start to grow your business as you've been doing and you can't do it all yourself anymore. How would you say that differs from the corporate world or do you see it a difference?
In terms of the delegation, let's see. You know, I think you have to really understand a lot about your own style because, Sherry, just you and I are different, and how I would go about delegating would be different than how you would go about delegating. So really understanding your style. Are you more of a controller? Do you micromanage? Are you good with the details? Are you not good with the details? Really understanding that piece of it. And then, you know, in the corporate world, typically you have a lot of direct reports. When you're managing it in your own business, your own small business, a lot of it is working with contractors or trying to find administrative assistants or the technical people. And I think a key piece of that is really setting standards or setting expectations and being really clear and communicating about what you want the output to look like or what you want the product to look like. I know a lot of times people will not want to delegate because they think it takes too much time or they think they're the only one that can do it. Excellent. And I will give you just an example of myself this week, how I fell into that trap myself and had to kind of coach myself out of it. I have a CRM, I have a database with all my client data in it, and I'm trying to clean it up. And I downloaded everything into an Excel spreadsheet, and I started plowing through all of that data myself, putting in addresses and things like that, and really trying to clean it up, thinking I was the only one that could do that because I'm the only one that knows my clients. Well, after about the first hour of that monotonous going through looking up addresses, I thought, I've got to find a different way. And what I realized is that there were parts of it, so I had to piece and part it out. So I had to put sort of a plan together of the steps of, hey, look, there are some clients in there, and I know that they've changed jobs, so I don't want my admin to go look for this job and this address. It's really around cleaning up a part of it, saying, just look for these addresses and scanning it through. So I think really, you know, identifying any routine tasks that you have, anything that has a standardized decision, anything with well-defined rules, I think, and really just saying, what's my plan? What are all of the steps and which steps of it can I source out and have somebody else do and have somebody else help me with?
And the thing that hits me in that particular instance too is the benefit of what will she learn by doing it to help you even more, right? To start familiarizing herself with your database.
Well, and that's just like in the corporate world. I was doing a training on delegation last week, and we talked about some of the managers were thinking that they were dumping on their employees or just passing off grunt work, if you will. And I asked them to shift their thinking about it, to really think about it as a development opportunity, to be strategic in how they were thinking this through, that not just dumping work on somebody else, but really thinking about, what does this person need in terms of development to get to the next level? And what are the assignments that I can delegate? That both takes things off my plate, but that can be an opportunity for development for them and really thinking about it that way. And if you outsource to the same person over and over, while you may move slower in the short term, over the long haul, you gain speed. So it's sort of that short-term pain for the long-term gain. But if you don't do that, you're going to have long-term pain, whether or short-term pain, it's going to be painful in all areas.
And where do you think this whole element of fear comes in this manager role that makes people hold back? What are you seeing out there?
I think there's three or four key areas that I coach to all the time. First one is around giving feedback, learning how to give feedback when somebody hasn't met your expectations or your standards.
And conflict. Do you see that as positive feedback, or do you put some, like, how do you give that feedback without, because I think we hold back because we're feeling so negative about it. How do you make it have a positive result in giving feedback?
Well, that's one of the things that I teach people to do in my training. So we practice how you go about setting yourself up. Part of it is the accountability piece. That's another piece that managers have a tough time with. So you have to have good expectations and good standards set at the front end so that you can talk at the back end about what was missing. Here's what we talked about. Here's what you agreed to and committed to. And then here's what you did. And there's a gap. And so it's not about getting emotional, but it's just talking about that gap. Here's what was agreed to and committed to. And here's what the goal was, what was expected. Here's what you delivered, and here's what was missing. So it's not emotional. You don't have to become a huge critic, right? So I think Feedback, conflict, accountability, those are three areas I think that a lot of people have a lot of fear around. And you can absolutely learn how to do that. It's a skill. I think some people are just born, they come out of the womb and it's natural and they can just do that beautifully. I was never able to do that. I don't know about you, but it didn't happen naturally for me. It was a skill. I had to be trained on it. I had to learn it. I had to find some easy methods, some formulas, if you will, or some ways to think about it, and shifting my thinking as well around it.
You know, it's interesting. As you talk about this, it hits me that, and I wonder if you found the same, is that after becoming a mother, I found that I became a better manager. And I don't know if I had deeper empathy at that point because of the skills that come along with being a mother and having to, you know, these are your kids for the rest of your life. How do you feel about that? And do you feel that it helped you in on your journey as a manager?
I think two things, becoming a mother and age both helped me.
Oh, yes, that age thing.
Yeah. Because I think when I was younger, you know, I had such high expectations and there was this idea that I had around perfectionism and, you know, just continually it had to be done right. And I think that was a key piece for me with the delegation of they weren't going to do it the way I wanted it to be done or my standards were so high. What I learned through the process that while I did have high standards, I could tap into the skill set of other people who had different skill sets than me, and they did it differently and better, or just differently and equally good. So I learned that it's sort of that yin and yang, if you will, that there's one side that I was bringing to the table, but other people are bringing a different set of skills, more creativity, more innovation, or whatever, that it was rounding out my skill set and making me be more effective. I could then focus on the things that I really enjoy and loved doing instead of being mired down in the stuff that you have to do, but you don't necessarily enjoy doing.
And what about the one area, you know, I know that I came across it all the time when I managed a large team and the whole conflict management. I know you do a lot of work around that and maybe talk to that a little bit. When you've got two equally good employees or contractors or whoever that you're working with, but they can't seem to get along together.
Well, that is a challenge, isn't it? I think a key piece of it is often personality based and really understanding the differences with those personalities that people bring to it. I do a lot of work with DISC. DISC is a behavioral assessment. That's not the only one I use. I do emotional intelligence assessments, Myers-Briggs, all of those. They're all great tools. And I think the key thing about those tools is it really heightens your own awareness of your style. We all have styles that we go to, and they all have been helpful to us in our careers. They're our strengths. They're what we know how to do. We also have things that if we do too much of it, it can be a little bit too much of a good thing, if you will. And I think through some of these assessments that I use, you can really understand more about your own style and what you're doing that's effective and what's ineffective. And it helps you learn about other people's styles and what you can do to bridge those
and what
differences.
Makes them sick and makes them happy, yeah. Makes them not happy, all of that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think there's so much, you know, it's fun for me when I do DISC training in particular, because you can just see the light bulbs going up as we do these activities. There are people are looking around the room and you can just see them gaining this awareness about, oh, that's why, like you have a need for this, or this is what stresses you out, or this is really motivating for you, where it's not at all motivating for me. And so it's really fun because you can just see with those light bulbs going on, it's like, okay, now I understand. Now I know how to work with you a little bit better. I know that you don't like long monologues. You need bullet points, right? You need me to get to the point. You have a need for quick results, or you have a need necessarily for more socialization and that personal relationship, and that's going to be important for you. Or you have a need to keep things the same and not change it up, or you have a need to really change things up. So a variety of things, but I think that that's really helpful, is really understanding what makes you tick and what makes other people on your team tick.
And just so what I'm hearing is that we're all unique human beings, and it's remembering that and what makes it. Yeah, cool. How would you say, so there's managing people and managing tasks. How, do you see a percentage of your day should be spent on either one? Have you looked at that, or what's your thoughts around that? Because I think that's my, you know, that's always been kind of an issue of me. How much time should I be spending over here, you know, when we have so many hours in each day?
Gosh, I don't know about the differences or how much percentage of time. One of the things that I see so differently about managing people and tasks, though, is people have emotions. And, you know, back to the empathy piece that you were talking about is really understanding the perspective of where they're coming from. Tasks, to me, because there's no emotion involved, it's sort of a check the box, get through it. There's not a lot to think about in terms of, you know, having process around it, having some structure, making it consistent, making it easy. But I think when dealing with people and managing people, we're not robots. We do have emotions. Thankfully, I'm glad for those emotions. I will be coaching people and we're having a session and they will get teary-eyed or they'll get emotional with, you know, whatever passion is coming through, and they'll apologize for it. And I say, never apologize. I think that's what makes us great. Those are the key things that make us different from robots, those emotions, those passions. So I love emotions. I'm an emotional person myself. I'm a highly sensitive person. Yeah. It's why we get along. And I think it brings a lot to, if we have to understand our emotions and, you know, thinking about emotional intelligence, it's really understanding our emotions and how we use those emotions when working with other people, and to make us more effective in understanding other people and their emotions when working with us. So.
Got it. Another element in your Manager's Edge program is time management. So kind of along those same lines, which some days I seem to do good and some days not so good. So any tips or ideas for our listeners around better ways to manage your time and really get some good focus time in your day?
Yeah, a couple of key strategies. Don't open up email until mid-morning or noon. Because for me, I just find that I just get, you know, you can just get sucked away with the computer.
Yeah. And running, yeah.
And really good calendaring, I think, is something that's really, really important. So putting things on your calendar in terms of the work that you need to get done. When I first started doing this, I just had ideas in the back of my head. Oh, I want to get this done today, and I want to get that done, and oh, my newsletter has to go out at some point this week. And I found that before I realized that the week had gone by and I hadn't gotten those things done. So I put tasks on the calendar, and just like I would have with a meeting with somebody, I slot it on there for however much time I need to get it done. And I calendar that out into the future. So if it's around expenses, or if it's around invoicing or writing my newsletter, or whatever it is that you have to get done, really calendaring that out and not blocking over it, or, you know, trying not to reschedule. Obviously, if something critical comes up, I will reschedule, but making sure that you have adequate time on there. There's the, have you ever heard of the Pareto principle? And I'm probably not going to say it quite right, but it's the 20-80. It's something around 20% of your business. Let me see if I can get this right. We spend 80% of the time doing 20% of the important tasks in our business, and trying to shift that around so that we're really spending 80% of our time on the 20% things that are really going to get us the lift. Oftentimes it's just the reverse. I know when managing employees in a business, sometimes we spend the bulk of our time managing the lowest performers. And really what we should be doing is spending the bulk of our time getting the top 10 or top 20% to an even higher level. That's when you're going to get your bang for your buck in your business, is really focusing on those people. And often we think, oh, they're doing great, I don't need to focus on them.
I need to go
focus on the problem thing. And really it's just the opposite. You're going to get more lift by doing just the opposite. So I think those things, if you have a task that you hate to do, get it done first, because then you're not going, you're you spend so much mental energy, and it really is energy, but thinking about, oh, I've got to do it, I've got to do it, I've got to do it, procrastinating, get it done right away. And then you don't have to think about that all day long. So
and
doing
what if
that.
You have that task that you never seem to get to, right? It is always pushed to the back, whether it's fear that's pushing it to the back, or just lack of priority, whatever. What would you say to help bring that back up to the front of the pile?
I would say figure out what it is that's preventing you from doing it. If it's so big that it's overwhelming you, put it into a project plan, break it down, take that first step. The people who achieve their goals or achieve their dreams, what you can do is start from a dream perspective. I have this dream. Well, then you start to put it together in a plan. You start to have goals as a result of that, and then it becomes tasks. And eventually those tasks turn into accomplishing your dream. So I think just piecemealing it out and starting with steps. And I would also say hire a coach who will hold you accountable.
Exactly, that accountability piece, right?
Yeah, it's really that accountability.
Fantastic. For new managers out there, people that either started a business and now find themselves in this role of a manager, or someone who is in the corporate world and find, you know, sometimes people get thrown into management positions with no, you know, just going, okay, here I am, I'm a manager now all of a sudden. What is the advice that you would give to them to gradually, you know, move into it and to become successful at the role of manager?
Well, unfortunately, that's what happens a lot of times in the corporate world. We take a high-performing individual contributor and we put them into a manager role and we think they're going to be successful. I've seen that over and over and over again in my career. A couple of things that I would recommend. One is find a good mentor, somebody that you look up to, that you think it has great inspiration, that is really just a great leader, and ask them if they will mentor you formally or informally. Take them out to lunch, have coffee with them, pick their brain, and try to see what it is that they're doing. So have a great role model. I think also get some training. I created my Manager's Edge program as a direct result of what I was seeing in the marketplace about this happening over and over and over again. People were not being trained on how to manage conflict, how to give feedback, how to hold people accountable, how to delegate. It's all those things that as more mid or senior leaders, we gain those skills along the way, and we think everybody should just know how to do it. But so really getting that skill, getting that training, I think can go a long way. Whether it's your whole company and bringing in somebody like myself or someone else to train a whole group of brand new leaders and supervisors, or doing it one-on-one. I know for me, I have a new program that I'm launching in the fall, and I'll be doing it online. So teaching people through videos and activities that they can do it either one-to-one or one-to-many.
And it just goes back to that whole thing that education is power, right? Throughout our lifetime, no matter what age we are, it always continues to help us to learn and to grow.
Well, I think we forget that we weren't just born at age, you know, for me, 53, and having the skill sets that I have, it's come along the way, and I've taken a lot of training along the way. I wasn't just born into it. I think that there are great leaders, and you can't be born, but I think most of us have to read books, go to training, get some on-the-job training, finding good mentors. I think those are all great practices.
But I think if you even look at some of the great leaders, right, they had great mentors as
yes,
well.
Yes, they did. Yeah. Right?
And absolutely. So that's great advice. As we wrap up our conversation here today, I could go on and on with questions for you, but we will wrap it up. What is one of your favorite quotes around management or managing or something that you find that's empowering?
A quote that's coming to mind is something my mom used to tell me all the time, and I think it applies to management, but also life in general. And she said, you know, whether you think you can or you think you can't, either way, you're right. I think it was Henry Ford who said that. And it really kind of goes to the power of your thoughts and your thinking and how just powerful that is. It's truly my belief that if you change your thinking, you will change your life. So I love that. If whether you think you can or you think you can't, either way, you're right.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much. And to let everyone know, you can learn more about Annette's work at AspenEdgeConsulting.com. Again, that's AspenEdgeConsulting.com. She has a lot of information on her website, a beautiful website, I might say. And so please visit her there. If you know of someone who could use the information that we've shared with you here today, please pass on this podcast to them. And please leave us a comment and let us know what you thought and what the highlights were for you from today's podcast. And as always, I wish you the courage to be the difference. Sherry Ruskis signing off with Annette Mathias. I almost said that wrong. Annette Mathias. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye.